Good evening, and welcome to Good News Update from Living Compassion. My name is Melinda, and our guest this evening is Dave, who is a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. And Dave is going to tell us a bit about the team that is currently in Africa and practice and how those all fit together. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Melinda.
So the team in Africa and practice.
Yeah, well, folks are probably aware, if you've been following along with the blog, that the folks are there having a very big time, it looks like, as we always do in Africa. And, you know, we're kind of waiting on the tips of our toes here every day as the days go by to find out kind of what happens next, because, of course, we don't know until they send an email and tell us. So we're kind of on the edges of our seat. And what we've been looking at here, and this is why we thought it'd be fun to talk about it on the radio show, is how much this trip and every trip and the work we do in Africa is our practice.
Yes, that all of the trips, the entire project that is in Cantalamba in Zambia grows from our practice and represents our practice in many ways, doesn't it?
It's true, and it really is our practice. You know, I was thinking about it earlier today that, you know, sometimes the way practice manifests is washing the dishes in the monastery kitchen for those of us who live here. Sometimes it might be sawing a board or nailing a couple boards together. Sometimes it might be sitting in front of a computer doing things. And sometimes it's servicing the work in Cantalamba. And even though all of those things look really different, they're all exactly the same. You know, the intention behind it is the same, is to be present and be with ourselves in unconditional love and acceptance in whatever it is that we're doing. Sometimes what we're present to and with is, you know, the board or the dish. Sometimes it's our beautiful friends over there in Cantalamba.
Yeah, it's an extraordinary opportunity, isn't it?
It really is. And, you know, one of my very favorite things about the work that we do there is we don't go there, you might say, as Buddhists ostensibly. We go there, you know, as Buddhists inside ourselves, but we don't go there. We're not talking about Buddhism. We're not talking about practice. We're not trying to get people to meditate, any of that. We're just being our practice. And I just love that because it just shows how much practice works, because we can walk out of this setting, you know, here at the monastery, all the folks who are there right now are living at the monastery currently, and can walk out of this setting where everything is practice, everything is set up to be practice, it all reflects practice, it all looks like practice, through, you know, multiple airports, you know, all kinds of things to get to Cantalamba, and be in a setting that's completely different from that, and the practice shines through. I know it does for the people there. I don't know if they could say what it is because, you know, we really don't talk to them about it. But I think that they can sense the practice that's there in what we're doing as we're interacting with them.
Yeah, that we carry something with us. We act out of a place that is probably very different from many other folks who might have shown up in Cantalamba at one point or another.
Yeah,
and I was thinking about it today, is that we go in and we don't particularly have an agenda. We just want to be with people and listen and do offer what we can offer and be in relationship with the people there in very special ways, it seems.
Yeah, that's really true. It seems like, you know, if we could name an agenda, it would be something like unconditional love and acceptance.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It just, and yeah. And that, you know, that that unconditional love and acceptance, and of course, it's right at the heart of our practice, and it's a very, really powerful thing. And, you know, it has manifested in this amazing monastery that we have here that has been built over many years. It manifests in the Sangha, you know, all across the world at this point, thousands of people who are participating in this practice, and manifests in this this truly remarkable, I think, and unique project in Africa. And it's all the same energy, and it feels to me like if you kind of brought it all back to kind of the center of it, it's right there. It's the heart. You know, it's what we're practicing being in touch with all the time. It's the power of that kind of rippling out and into the world and manifesting in these different ways.
Yeah, and I was just seeing as you were saying that how a lot of people actually come to practice through learning about the Africa Vulnerable Children Project.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know anything about us or Buddhism, but they get really interested in the project in Cantalomba and then make their way to the monastery, or in one way or another really connect with practice in the way that that we live it.
Yeah, I think that's really true. And I think it's because of how we're doing that project there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it really is, you know, about practice for us, and I think you can just really sense it. You know, it's not, there's this thing that we, when we're on retreat here, if the retreat involves working meditation, which some of our retreats do, there's a thing we put on the message board, as you know very well, and it starts off, working meditation is not about getting things done. And then it goes on to describe that working meditation is about being in the present and being in the mind of awareness as we're going about doing tasks. And that, you know, we're here this week doing working meditation. The monks who are here,
mm-hmm.
folks in Zambia are there doing working meditation too. And that's really what they're doing, is working meditation. So they're
mm-hmm.
not there. That's the point. It's not actually to get something done there. It's not even really to make a difference, even though the project is making a tremendous, beautiful
difference
there in Cantalomba. But it's not about that. It's about being in the mind of meditation. And I don't really know, but I project that people who come to us through the Africa work sense that. They can
mm-hmm.
see it somehow in the work. And, you know, these folks, the way they're going about this is different from the way almost everybody is going about it. There's relationship building. They're facilitating this process in Cantalomba instead of just coming and imposing something. There's a lot of heart there. There's a lot of connection happening between the people. And
yeah.
I just think people probably really respond to that and say, gosh, you know, I'd like to know more about these folks.
Yeah, yeah. Both the folks here and the folks in Africa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true.
Who are all quite amazing people.
Yeah. I think the other thing that it does for us, and I think in this I speak for the monks and hopefully for everyone who is out there and who is aware of the project and follows the blog, is that it really puts everything in perspective for us.
Mm.
You know, it's so easy, as we all know, to be in a conversation with conditioned mind about how this isn't working or that's not working or how I didn't get what I wanted or, you know,
mm-hmm.
here at the monastery, you know, it's the weather right now. It's raining cats and dogs. It's cold.
Yeah.
It has been forever. When is spring ever going to come? But and it'd be easy to get into a conversation with conditioned mind about it. But then you think about those folks in Cantalomba who have nothing. Now, the
yeah.
folks who are involved in our project there are, you know, they're doing pretty well. But still, comparatively, compared to us, they still have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, all the people there, you know, living for, you know, you think about there's that compound. And it's, I think it's 4 square kilometers. And to live, to be born there, you know, to live there, you can't, there's nowhere else to go. I mean, the only
yeah.
place you can go would involve walking forever. And then once you
mm-hmm.
got there, there would be nothing to do because there's no opportunities, there's no money, there's no resources. And
yeah.
to think about how people live there and then compare it to this pathetic conversation with conditioned mind going on about some tiny little thing
yeah.
that I don't like or is not going my way or something, it just makes it so easy to let go of.
Yeah, the perspective shift is really, really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And I was seeing, as you were saying that, the experience of being there with the people for whom singing is a common way of expressing what's going on, and the joy that it's easy to project is expressed through that singing.
Mm-hmm.
And these are people who, as you were saying, have virtually nothing looked at from the perspective of a Western person who's got, you know, all of the things we have, but singing joyfully and caring for one another and being really receptive of us and our being there.
Yeah, that is such a good point. I actually didn't think of that, but that is a really good point. That in a way they're modeling for us the happiness that we're looking for here. Because as you say, they can be happy, they can be full of joy with nothing,
yeah.
which is
yeah,
that sure is my. Sorry.
Yeah, the unconditional love and acceptance goes all around.
Yeah, it's true.
We all get to participate.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting
yeah.
too to think, you know, we go there with practice and. by association, sort of, they get involved in our practice, even though, you know, we don't, there's no formal aspect to it, and there's no, you know, proselytizing kind of things going on at all. And conversely, they, it's easy to project, live it with an ease in themselves that I think is challenging for us in I don't know, it's hard to say, but seems that way. And that we come into that practice of theirs, of being okay with this life circumstances that they have, being, finding joy in each other. And then that's really fun about the singing, because, boy, that is just, it's impossible, it's impossible, in my experience, to be unhappy while they're singing.
Well, Dave, we're just about out of time, but it sure sounds like you're describing a win-win-win.
Yep, for sure.
All the way around.
Yep. So for folks who are listening out there, get a piece of the action. You know, tune into those blogs, and as they come in, and find out what's going on there, because, you know, that's a big part of the reason why the monks write the blogs while they're there, is so that other people can, you know, have the kind of experiences that we're talking about vicariously as it's going on. So just an encouragement there.
Get to participate in those relationships in some form.
Yeah, I really think you do. You get to, and you get to have that that perspective, that help with the perspective, just seeing what life is like in this place, so different from this place, you know, for most of us here in the United States.
Yes. Yeah. Well, thanks so much, Dave.
Thank you, Melinda.
I really enjoyed talking about practice and about Africa, of course. And I think probably I turn it over to Michael at this point.
Uh-huh. Thanks a lot, Melinda.
Uh-huh. Thank you, Dave. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
How are you?
Great. I just, right before the radio show, sat there and read all of the blogs right straight through.
Great.
The ones I'd already read, and then the latest one that was posted, just to have a, you know, a feel of the whole thing.
Yes.
And it was so fun, and so fun to listen to Dave and Melinda talk about it, because in reading the blog, I watched Sequoia arrive. Now, Sequoia had never been before this trip.
Yeah.
And she was the new one. Everybody else on the trip had been there before.
Yes.
And in the pictures, looking at people welcome her, it's like, oh, she's your family? Oh, okay, she's our family.
Yeah.
You know, just so open-hearted and beautiful. It's really, really fun. And of course, you know, for everybody, those who have been there and those who have just followed along, to see those familiar faces again. One thing that I think when we were together on Sunday night, I mentioned this. I didn't see it in the blog, so I wanted to remark on it, because it captures so perfectly what's going on there.
Yeah.
That when the first time we went to Cantalomba, we took pictures of the first 100 children that we were providing food and schooling for.
Yeah.
And it was such, I'm sure you know those pictures.
I do.
We put these little kids up on this, in this little bench in this school building, and you'd think that we were taking them directly to be sold into some god-awful circumstances somewhere. I mean, they were terrified. They didn't know what we were. They didn't know what that camera was.
Wow.
So it was just, and even though they had their teachers there and parents and everybody, you know, they were just terrified. They just knew we were going to do something hideous to them. And they're tiny. You know, they're 3 and 4 and 5. Even the 6-year-olds are just tiny.
Yeah.
So they got together the other night and showed that video to the people in the community. And now these kids are, you know, some of them are teenagers. And every one of those children is still alive. And I think that is, I just bet it would be incredibly hard to match that statistic in very many communities like the one where we are there in Zambia. It's really actually miraculous.
Yes. It brought tears to my eyes when you mentioned it the other night.
Yeah.
The talk.
It's just it's just extraordinary, and so many of the things that have happened over the years. You know, the getting clean water, which probably saved God knows how many of those children and the adults in that community.
Yeah.
Clean water. And then, you know, from there, the medical care that's provided for them now, eating every day, you know, just the whole thing. It's such a joy to be involved in something that simply feels so good.
Yes. Yes. For some reason, the words pure goodness always come to mind when I think about the Africa Project.
Yeah, it's just what it feels like. You know, there's nothing going on for anybody except love.
Yes. Yes. It's very beautiful.
So, how are you, Michael?
I am great. Conditioning was at me earlier today with a lot of stress and overwhelm and not enough time, and I was listening to my recordings the whole time.
Good for you. It's all the difference, isn't it?
It is all the difference.
Yeah.
And having the radio show to participate with, it feels a million miles away.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Identification, disidentification. Two completely different realities to live in.
Indeed. Indeed. Sherry, I have a fabulous list of announcements here.
All right.
There's a new email class beginning on April 1st, which is about a week away.
Mm.
Time to feel good. Folks can register on the website. Can I give a little testimonial about that?
Please.
Okay, so this is the second stage of this email class, which was first offered in December. And it's wonderful in many ways. A few of the things I love about it is that I get your guidance on everything that I write in.
True. I respond to every email I get.
It's amazing. That is amazing. And as you know, it's easier to do this work with Sangha, with other people, and
to see that
my special circumstances are really not special or different than anyone else.
Well, that we're all in such special circumstances. Yeah.
Yes. I'm special and not special in many ways.
Yeah, yeah.
And the last thing I wanted to mention is the recording and listening practice itself. I've noticed what it's done for me is it keeps me reminded of my successes.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So as I practice, you know, I start to see through things. And if I'm not recording and listening, you know, as soon as I see through something, there's a big campaign to cover all that up.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's a good one. You must write that in early on. So when we ask for tips for things to record about, and that's a really good one.
Yes, because otherwise, as you know, it gets forgotten, and I start to believe the story of I'm not getting anywhere and practice doesn't work. And yet when I pay attention, I see that it is working, and then I record it, and then it's there for posterity.
Yeah, yeah. You can listen to it regularly, and pretty soon the information that you're getting is, wow, I have a lot more successes than what conditioning would like to call failures.
Yes.
And that becomes the reality that one lives in. And it's true.
Yes.
Which is the other fabulous thing about it. Yeah. I saw an email come through that a while back I did an hour-long conversation with Tammy Simon, who is the head of Sounds True. For people, who great company. And she has this thing where she just interviews spiritual teachers about, you know, what are you passionate about now? And, of course, this is what I'm passionate about now. And so I was talking about it. And I had just been thinking, I wonder whatever happened to that. But I didn't think to go on Sounds True's website to see if it's there. And apparently it is, because we got an email from a fellow who said that he has made a copy of it. And he is, I guess, putting it on flash drives or whatever, making keychains out of them and giving them to all of his friends. Because in there I'm talking about this revolution, this self-mentoring revolution that I hope we're starting. And so that's his contribution to the revolution. That's amazing.
Great. I'm going to look that up.
Yeah, because this practice, you know, it's so simple. It costs very, very little. It's working out your own salvation diligently, which is what the Buddha taught us to do, and it works. So, you know, there's just no downside to it. And it's, you know, now it's just doing it and supporting one another to do it and to remember to do it and keep doing it until it becomes, as you indicated, you know, a trusted ally and a source of comfort and enjoyment.
Yes.
I love my recordings.
Yes. Yes. It's great. Sherry, you will be at Malaprop's bookstore in Asheville, North Carolina on May 8th at 5 p.m.
I will. And actually, the reason that I'm going to be in Asheville, it's not on the schedule because it's a by invitation only sort of a deal. But I'll be doing a special retreat that's been created for the folks who went through this Time to Feel Good email class the first time around.
Yeah.
So there's one happening in North Carolina from April 30th to May 7th, I guess it is. And then another one that's happening out here at the monastery, May 14th through 21st, I think it is. And so I'm mentioning that now because folks who go through this next one, this next email class, that particular retreat will also be available to them. And it's just I'm so excited about it. I hope it's as good as I think it's going to be. So it's the follow-up to this recording and listening work that we're so enthusiastic about.
Fabulous. Fabulous. And then you'll be in Rhinebeck, New York at the end of May 27th through 30th at the Omega Institute. And folks can register through Omega for that. Then back to California, you'll be at Esalen Institute in Big Sur, co-leading a workshop with Mark Lesser on spirituality in business.
Yes.
And that's June 10th through 12th.
Mm.
And then Namaste, the weekend of July 8th and 9th. And
actually, good point, Michael. That was just changed. It's now the last weekend in July, the 29th and 30th, I think it is.
Great.
Yep. Breaking news.
And that will support the Africa Vulnerable Children Project.
Yes, that's our annual fundraiser that Jenny and Paul from Namaste host for the kids.
Yes. And then in the middle of July, July 16th through 23rd, you'll be leading a retreat, Not What But How, at the Zen Monastery Peace Center in Murphy's.
True.
And then back to Esalen for another weekend workshop, August 12th through 14th. What do these questions have in common?
And people have to go on the website to find out what the questions
yes,
are, right?
Yes, they do.
Very good. Don't
yes, see. They do. And we're barely done with summer, and that means it's almost time for the 10th annual Golden Gate Bridge Walk on October 1st.
Be there, please.
Be there.
It's going to be the Sangha event of the decade.
Great. Great. And we have some callers.
Good.
First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Did we go on so long
first
we gave
caller,
up?
First caller, are you there?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Wow. I got on again. That's pretty amazing. This is Valerie.
Hi, Valerie.
Hi.
What's going on tonight?
Let's see. Well, I've got a pounding heart tonight since I got on.
So you're warmer. That's a good thing.
Yes. I'm going to sign up for the next email class.
Very good.
And I was doing great. I had the calendar printout and solid sparkly stars with check marks of 15-minute meditation. And then this week I fell off again, fell off my calendar, and it started going blank again. But
And now you're going to fall back on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, it doesn't matter a bit, does it?
Yeah, no mistakes.
Nope.
Just
you just had a little break. And so when you have a little break like that, you realize how much you love practice, what it does for your life, how you miss it when you don't do it, and then you come back to it with more enthusiasm than ever. Nothing
yeah.
lost.
I wanted my subject or my topic to be on judgment.
Uh-huh.
I read in This Side of Nirvana by Sarah Jenkins.
Mm-hmm.
Her rememberings on you saying that judgment isn't a bad thing, that it is useful because it lets you know what's going on within you. And you said that karma is from beginning of beginningless time. And I was just wondering if you could talk some more about that.
Yeah. I find judgment incredibly helpful. You know, there are a couple of things about it. One is that people get all worked up about this idea that there's this thing called judgment, and it's a really bad thing, and you shouldn't do it. And so if I said... wow, you know, he really talks a lot. That's the kind of thing that people are conditioned to say, oh, you can't say that. You know, you shouldn't say that. Because that's
yeah.
a bad thing. And you're saying a bad thing. Okay? Now, all I'm actually saying is, in my experience, he talks a lot. If I talk that much, I would say I talk a lot. So it's my projection. And when I bring that back to me, first of all, maybe he does talk a lot. You know, maybe we could ask him and he would say, oh, God, I talk a lot. You know, sometimes I make myself tired. I talk so much. So it can simply be something along those lines of he has brown hair and brown eyes. You know, it's just how it is. There's no spin on it. It doesn't mean anything. There's nothing. It's just a comment. It's just an observation. You see what I mean with that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just think that's an interesting distinction or thing to notice. But the really interesting part of it for us spiritually or for practitioners of awareness is to follow that back and say, huh, what have I got going about talking, about how much people talk, how much I talk, how much I should talk? When do I get told I'm talking too much, or when am I getting beaten up because I'm not talking and I should be? What's talking? What's up with that for me? And if I use it that way, then everything that arises in my mind, whether I verbalize it or not, because a lot of times people feel like they get extra points because they walk around thinking things and not saying them.
Yeah.
Yeah? But we don't get any extra points for that, because whatever happens with me, whether I think it or say it, the same thing is happening with me. So I might as well use all of it to my advantage. So I walk along and I realize the kinds of thoughts that are going through my head about this and that and something else. If I just follow those back, again, here's the bottom line, isn't it? We take out the element of good person, bad person, right thing, wrong thing. We just remove that. And so
okay.
I can follow those thoughts back to see what they tell me about myself. When I hear myself make a comment about something, I can notice that and go, well, that's interesting. Where does that reside in me?
Okay.
But if we get stuck on, you're judging, and judging is wrong, we go nowhere. Here's the really fun piece of this. If you have a voice in your head telling you that you're a bad person for being judgmental, it's good to notice that the voice in your head is being judgmental.
That's good.
Isn't that good?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think not judging is way overrated.
I also read the Downward Course, and I think that's why I say downward spiral, because I read the Downward Course at one point in this translation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of scary, because some people,
I actually don't know what that is, so.
It's a chapter in this translation of the Dhammapada that I have.
Uh-huh. Oh, and it's one of those where it threatens you with eternal damnation?
I think it might, yeah.
Yeah.
It says, like, you have to distinguish what's wrong from what's, you know, like, if you're really wrong or if you're just thinking you're wrong or, like, I don't know.
Yeah. You know, so many of those things are just not helpful. Because here's the thing. For me, anyway, but this is the essential piece of this. The difficulty that you're going to run into, that I would run into, but we're talking about you, that you would run into, is that somebody gets put in place inside of you who's going to decide whether you're right or wrong. And that someone is the cause of suffering.
Okay.
So if you simply pay attention and without any self-hate, now, and this is the key to the deal. You know, all of this happens after we move through self-hate. Okay, because you're not really going to get any straight information about anything as long as you're entertaining voices of self-hatred.
The person of regret is a separate person than the person who did it or did something.
That's exactly right. Yeah, so you're just paying attention and you're going along and something happens, you do something, you say something, you act in a certain way, and it hurts your heart. And you realize, I don't want to do that. I don't want to be like that. I don't want to do that. And there's no need for a beating. There's no need to feel bad. In fact, you could feel good because you've realized something really important. And then you devote yourself to the best of your ability, not being that way anymore. And if you are, then very humbly you say, well, karma is difficult to get through. So as I find understanding for this person, I'm going to work very hard to find understanding for all people who are caught in karma. And your compassion grows. So rather than turning to unkindness and unpleasantness to try to make you the person you should be, cultivate kindness and compassion and trust that your authentic nature is stronger than egocentric karmic conditioning. And you will be just fine.
Am I using practice against practice again? I think I am.
Well, that often
yikes.
Happens to us.
Yikes, yikes.
It's good to see, isn't it? Before it's over, we will see every one of those potholes, recognize them for what they are, and learn to sidestep them.
I also have been wanting to ask you, during the email class, I was the one who sent in Viva la turning la attention, or Viva, and I was just wondering, you said you're going to use it, and I was wondering how you would say it.
Oh, I would.
Do you remember that?
I wouldn't say it. I would only write it.
Oh, okay. You don't want to say it? Why not? You don't want to sound foolish?
My accent is not all it could be.
Okay, I get it. Neither is mine, that's for sure.
All right.
All right.
I'll see you April 1st then, huh?
Yeah.
If not before. All right.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Valerie. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, I want to remind folks, if they could keep their conversation to one topic in about 5 minutes, that would be great.
Okay. We'll do our best.
Yes. And we're going to hear from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
All right.
Porchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Music by Trish Brooks for Culligan gives voice to what Simply Celebrate is all about. Opening to rivers of joy, listening to our hearts, trusting ourselves and our lives. Simply Celebrate is a book and business that grew out of gratitude for the work of Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha. We use the practice as a foundation for helping people wake up to all the joy, spontaneity, color, and connection that is available in every moment. Please visit simplycelebrate.net.
What if you bathed in an ocean of roses? What if you swam in a river of joy?
Welcome back to Open Air. Sherry, we have another caller.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Zoe.
Hi, Zoe.
From Buffalo. How are you?
Yeah. Doing great, you?
Good. I just wanted to call and thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, you are so very welcome.
I didn't get to share my gratitude.
So let me make a wild guess here. Let me make a wild guess, Zoe. Practice is working for you.
Yeah, it's really amazing.
That's great.
I had a question, though. I have a lot of questions, but it's all fun. But the one that occurred to me to ask tonight was, is it possible to be identified at the same time as being present?
As being what?
Present.
Yes. Yes. Identified and present right. At the same time?
Yeah.
Yep. Have you had
okay.
that experience?
Yeah, it was really interesting. It was very, I mean, I've had numerous experiences, I think, of being present and identified, but there was one that was, like, very, like, perplexing or, I don't know, it just took me by surprise, you know.
Yes. So, can you describe
yeah, I was watching my breath, and I felt calm and centered, and I was contributing to a discussion, and I didn't realize until after the fact that what I said might have sounded caustic or, you know, not very nice sounding. But at the time, in the moment, it didn't even occur to me. You know, I was just trying to be honest and trying to be present and contribute. And so it was a really strange experience.
And so shortly after it came out of your mouth, you kind of heard it played back and realized?
It was actually like a good bit after.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't hear it played back, but I just sort of like reflected on it. And I was like, huh, geez, what did I sound mean? Was that... was that a faux pas? Like, did that, and it was just strange because at the moment I was very present. I mean,
okay.
And I didn't feel identified. Like, I didn't feel identified with a hateful voice or, you know what I mean?
So, did you get any information from anybody else that what you said sounded hateful?
Well, I asked, my husband was there and I was like, did what I say sound kind of mean? And he was like, could have been interpreted that way, and just sort of, he didn't directly say, but I interpreted that he was like, yeah, what you said was a little caustic, or, you know, just a little, you know, maybe not so nice, or maybe, I don't know. So
given the way you've described this, here's what I would project happened,
mm-hmm.
and it is not uncommon
right.
at all. So you're there in the moment, and it sounds like at least you felt like you were pretty present. You're with the breath, you're following the discussion, you say something. An amount of time, and it's fine, there's nothing there. And then an amount of time goes by, and you get information that what you said wasn't okay. That's, I would suggest,
yeah.
more a basic technique of self-hate than anything else.
Mm, okay.
So there's enough distance
okay.
that you can't be sure. There's really no way for you to know. And so it starts a campaign of creating doubt in you about what happened. So for me, with that kind of situation, I would simply say, well, okay, thank you. I'm going to pay more attention next time. And just drop it.
Okay. Well, yeah, because I wanted to ask in particular, to my recording practice, I heard you say two things. One, you said, just pick up the recorder and talk. And then I heard you say another time, like, don't let conditioning get a hold of the recorder. And, you know, I'm listening to my recordings, and they're up and down, and they're different people, I think, talking every single time. And a lot of them sound almost like, you know, I hear a lot of frustration or, you know, kind of those kinds of things. And I'm like, well, geez, I don't know if what I'm listening to. Is this like, you know, is this, am I reinforcing some of this, you know?
Yeah. Well,
because I know that phrase you said, you're like, don't let conditioning get the recorder. And so I want to make sure that that's not what I'm doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So that's a really important place to be looking. And it's fun, isn't it, how much is revealed by letting people talk into the recorder and then you listen at another time. Because you really can get a sense of which personality it is or, you know, if it is a karmic conditioning or self-hate. And the thing that I was encouraging people with is not to let, say, God forbid, you got upset with your husband. So not to let conditioning get the recorder and just rant in a way that causes you to be more identified.
Mm-hmm.
And even more important than that, is not to let self-hate get a hold of it and turn on you. You with me?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so sometimes So I was walking around doing something the other day and got really frustrated about something that was going on. And so I picked up the recorder and said all of the frustrations that I was feeling into the recorder. And by the time I was finished, it was passed. You know, I just said it as it the way I would say it to you if you were there, and then it's over. And that's different from, well, they're doing this and that, and I can't believe that she said that, and he's that. So it becomes the recordings of the workings of self-hate in your conditioned mind.
Okay. Yeah, I felt like I did a recording, and I think I saw myself go kind of back and forth. It was really interesting.
Yes.
Like, I kept going back into the conditioned, oh, but I don't like them. And then it would go back to, like, you know, but she was probably just concerned. And then, like, oh, but I don't like her. And I kind of just watched them flip-flop, and it was really, I mean, it was interesting. I thought it was useful, but I just wanted to check in and kind of
make sure
I wasn't going the wrong way with it.
Nope. I would use it that way myself. And it is interesting because you get to step back and watch yourself in action. But it's when it's a campaign, it can almost, from what people describe, almost be a brainwashing kind of thing, where the conditioning will get a hold of the recorder and start talking the way they hear inside their head. So now it's being reinforced. They're hearing it inside their head, and they're hearing it through their ears via the recorder. And that one we want to nip.
Okay.
Yeah,
well,
so if you ever hear a recording that says you and is talking to you about you and what's wrong with you and that sort of thing, or talking about them and what's wrong with them, and it's not somebody who's looking to the mentor for guidance, but just wants to maintain a position, maintain an identification, then, you know, let the flags go up and watch out for that one.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You are very welcome.
All right. Well, I should go because it's been more than 5 minutes, I think. So.
All right. See you in class.
All right. Okay.
Good night.
Bye-bye. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Zoe. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have another caller.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Janet from New Hampshire.
Janet.
Hi.
Hi. Hi.
This is just idle curiosity, but what's the weather like in New Hampshire these days? Is it better than what we're having here in California?
I don't know. What are you having?
A lot of snow.
You're having snow?
Yes.
Wow.
Unexpected snowstorms in a row.
Wow. We had snow yesterday, yeah, after having really, warm weather for here, like in the 60s, and now it's back down in the 30s and looks and acts like winter again.
All right. Just
so here I'm just thinking about, I'm dreaming about the monastery.
Well, don't. Dream about
thinking
the monastery.
Thinking about those 90-degree sunny days.
Yeah. Think May.
You're right.
So what's going on?
Well, I'm calling because of my monthly commitment. And, you know, one thing I was thinking about before was actually last week was the week that was a month because I mark it in my little book.
Mm-hmm.
And something came up, and I didn't call, and I had a reflective listening buddy call later that night after the radio show. And I was like, it's really great to see. There was no beating, you know, there was no like, oh, I can't believe you didn't call and you made a commitment and you tell everyone about your commitments and how good you're doing with your commitments and then you didn't do it. there was just like none of that. All I did was erase my little star that says I'm calling in and move it to tonight, because I really knew that that was fine and I'd be calling tonight.
Uh-huh.
And it just felt really kind.
Now, what? How come you didn't call last week?
Something came up, you know, like unexpectedly.
Yeah.
Somebody showed up that I didn't know was going to show up, and the plans just changed on the spot.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So there was no evil intent on your part?
No. No, there was no evil intent, but I think sometime in the past, it conditioning would have turned it around so that that was evil intent.
Yes, or imagined. So that no matter what life presents, you should do what you said you would do. And
because
course,
you had because you had made that commitment, and not only that, but you've been telling everyone about your commitment.
Yeah. And for me, the point of a commitment is that you are committed to it. It's not you have to do a certain thing in a certain way at a certain time. Otherwise, you are a bad person.
Oh, I love that, Sherry. That's what I was feeling, but you just put it in the perfect words.
See there?
Yeah.
So I have a commitment to eat really well. And sometimes I eat things that I'm pretty sure wouldn't fit really nicely under that in that category. And that's fine. It doesn't change my commitment to eat in a really healthy way.
Yeah, that is so good, because that's exactly it. And I think that was how easy it was to just say, okay, well, that will be next week, because
yes.
I do have a commitment.
Because I'm committed.
Because I'm committed.
Yeah, it's not a contest. It's who I am.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that.
I do these things because they're who I am, and it's how I want to live and who I want to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't do it so that I can get a check mark and a star on my forehead and have somebody tell me, okay, this time you're a good person, but we're going to continue to watch you because we actually know that you're not a good person. And sooner or later, you're going to do something that we can jump on and prove to you that you're a bad person. It's not what it's
about. Yeah. Right, and that's exactly it. It's like, see, look what you did. I mean, that would have been something that could have come up easily.
Yes.
And I guess that's what I was really thrilled about, was that it didn't.
Yes, yeah, and that's freedom.
It did feel free.
Yeah, so the way conditioning frames it for people is, you've got this list of things that if you do them in this way, you're okay, and if you don't, you're a bad person. And then the scrutiny begins, and the whole thing is focused on the first time that you don't meet that artificial standard, and it just has nothing to do with what we're doing in awareness practice.
Yeah, and as you're talking, I'm seeing this person here, this committed person that has such good intentions.
Yeah.
And you know, and just seeing what happens to that person.
Yes.
When she listens to what conditioning is doing.
Yeah. Yeah, we call it awareness practice, not we will scrutinize you until we have proof that you are a bad person practice.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how almost everybody approaches it, because that's how almost everybody approaches everything. You know, that's what it's like to be a little kid. That's what it's like to be in school. That's what it's like to be in society. And so when we come to awareness practice, why wouldn't we approach that in the same way?
Mm.
Which is unfortunate, because it misses the point utterly. I mean, as completely as it's possible to miss the point. This practice that we're doing, this awareness practice, is a practice of compassion. So So
yeah.
It's actually the place where we can safely drop all of that stuff, all of that self-scrutiny and judgment and listening to voices that are constantly measuring us and comparing and telling us how we failed and what we did wrong. We can drop all that because that's not what we're doing. Doing that self-scrutinizing or being allowing ourselves to be scrutinized by self-hate is like showing up for a soccer team with a badminton racket and little birdie. Do you know? I mean, it's they have nothing to do with each other.
Yeah, and it's so, pervasive.
Hmm.
Well, and I guess that's what you're saying, because it's for me to have noticed, wow, I'm not even beating myself up. I mean, the conditioning's not beating me up. There's no beating happening. There's mm-hmm. there's no problem here.
Yeah.
And just to yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's like, well, that's great.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, that's great. And it's so different from the way you were trained that it catches your attention.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I love calling in, because you always put everything I'm thinking in the most perfect words.
Oh, thank you. Well, you should call
more
often then.
You're so welcome. I will. I will call again.
Right.
You'll hear from me again.
In a month or so, because you have a commitment.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
You will.
You're that kind of person.
Mm-hmm. And you have a list of people here trying to get online, so
good.
I'm going to go.
All right.
Thank you.
Good night.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Janet. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to hear from Sangha Market and Stop, Drop, and Breathe, and we'll be right back.
All right.
What's this from Living Compassion?
If you've got a craving for fundraising and can't get enough of the good stuff, cruise and jet on the internet to www.sanghamarket.com.
That's sanghamarket.com for all of you squares out there.
Sangha Market, where you can sell, auction, buy, all to benefit Living Compassion. Check it out today.
If you suddenly find yourself believing the voices in your head, don't panic. Just remember these three easy steps. Stop, drop, and breathe. That sequence again is stop, drop, and breathe. This public service announcement is brought to you by Voice Busters Incorporated, purveyors of the finest practice tools and reminders since 2008. Visit us on the World Wide Web at thevoicescartoons.org.
Stop, drop, and breathe. Stop, drop, and breathe.
Welcome back to Open Air. We have another caller, Sherry.
Very good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
This is Susan, and I'm so excited that I got on. And I've been working with a particular issue that for a long time now, and with my recordings, I have been noticing the theme
uh-huh.
coming up, and I've been tempted to call in about it for probably several years now, but just keep thinking I can work with it and just really see what is going on. But
shall I stop you right there and comment on that one?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, when you've got an issue and it's gone on for weeks, it would be good to get another opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Months, it's critical. That years, way too
yeah.
long. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it had you bamboozled.
Yeah, it's not like I haven't been working like it, with it at the monastery and in my practice, and but it, I guess I was really sick last week, and I was home the whole week, and it was raining, and my husband of 31 years, you know, he made soup, and yet what really stood out is I think I called in earlier about Enneagrams, and I think I'm a 2, and he's a 5, where he needs lots of space and distance, and yet it just so struck me how little maybe just interaction and interest and care and any of that was happening, and I've always kind of worked with kind of accepting who he is and how he does things. But our daughter called, and he just became very animated on the phone talking to her, and there was such an ease in their conversation, and it was so beautiful, and it made me so sad, and I kind of brought it up with him, and he just said something, well, what they were talking about was something that he had mentioned, but then I think I interjected with something like, I saw that on the internet, and then that shut him down, he said. And he just wouldn't talk anymore, and so I mean, we've had these talks before about how he can't talk to me, and just our style, and he, it's just really sad. And I guess then it kind of went into just our son, who you met at the bridge walk. He was home for a little while, and we have a good relationship, I think, you know, a lot of talking, and he works in the kitchen with me and everything, and my husband isolates himself a lot, you know, in his office with the computer, and he just said how weird it was when our son was home, and how I don't know, my interactions with him. And I just really love our son so much. And it really surprised me. I just don't know what to do. And I guess what I'm working with now is we talked some more, and he really expressed how he doesn't really care so much. At least that's what he was kind of talking about.
He doesn't care so much
about me.
That would explain a lot, wouldn't it?
Yeah. And so that he could easily live alone, and that it's so painful living with me, because he can't talk to me, he can't open up to me, and I've really been looking at intimacy and like I am all ears. I mean, this is something that's been going on. We've been married 31 years. And in the past, I've really taken on that I'm the one that's not listening properly. And if only I could do it right, you know. But I guess what's happening with me is that this, what I'm thinking is this young person gets engaged, and boy, does she ever go into panic mode. And I've been recording, and that's what I've been working with, is the recordings and kind of sabotaging the panic attacks a little bit, that I can slow them down and focus on my breathing and my body sensations. But I realized that my well-being is so connected into his.
And that's what needs to stop, right?
I know. See, that's what I've really come to. And I think that's probably part of the big problem.
Yes, I would guess that you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it doesn't mean that you need to leave him or do anything in particular, and it sounds to me like it's really important that you find fulfillment for yourself and your life for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And stop focusing on him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Don't you suppose?
Yeah. Mhm.
Because and so that would be the assignment that I would offer you, and then we'll talk again. Is what's the payoff? You know, what is the payoff for continuing to attempt to get somebody to do something that they are very clearly not interested or willing to do?
Yeah. And I think that what, like, threatens that young person inside of me is where will our daughter and son come when they come home, you know? And you know, it's sort of like the bag lady on the street, maybe a little bit, just that whole theme, where will our dogs go, you know? I mean, it sort of
goes there.
Now,
wait, why is anybody going anywhere?
Yeah, that's what the threats are in the voices.
Okay.
That puts me over the edge right
yeah.
away.
Okay, so you're right. You do know how to do this. So it's you from center, intervening, getting between those hateful voices and that little girl,
mm-hmm.
letting her know that you're going to be there for her, you're going to take care of her, it's going to be fine, even
mm-hmm.
if you should wind up on the street, which you
yeah.
very likely will not, you're still going to take care of her, and all of that fear stuff that's happening, you know, to put a kibosh on it, that's the advantage of being able to turn your attention where you want it to be. And
mm-hmm.
then where your kids will come is to a place where their mother is happy.
Mm-hmm.
And the dogs will be there in a place where their mistress is happy. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, which is what everybody wants.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not you to devote yourself to trying to make something happen with somebody else who is not interested in it happening and making yourself miserable in the process.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with the old, you know, working out your own salvation diligently, you have one person to save, one person whose well-being and happiness to secure.
So, I mean, I've been doing the recordings, and I've reflective listening, and I'm planning to do the month-long retreat this summer.
Good for you.
Yeah.
And your assignment between now and the next time we talk is
mm-hmm.
really to see what is the payoff
for payoff.
Continuing to do this for years, right?
Oh,
what is the what is the payoff? And to look really, really closely, you know, payoff is not necessarily a positive. There's a big hint.
Okay? Just that self-hate can just run rampant.
Could very well be. Yeah, and so just to look at all of the things that exist in your life because of this pursuit, those are all the payoffs that you've gotten out of doing this. And I'm not saying this to you, of course, to add one more layer of self-hate, but to bring some just good hard looking at, well, what the heck am I doing?
You know, I'm wondering, like, the payoff. Like, we live in a really beautiful place. We have 10 acres. I mean, the monastery kind of reminds me of where we live. And it's been my home, you know.
And it's not going anywhere. You notice how quickly you jump to you're going to lose everything if you don't continue in this very unsuccessful endeavor.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
Yeah. So if I don't continue to do this thing that makes me really unhappy and is not exactly sounding like a thrill for my husband, then I'm going to lose everything.
Yeah. There it goes again, the broken record.
Yeah.
Yep.
So
yep.
You saw it, didn't you? Yeah.
Yep.
So what it's got you believing is, if I don't keep doing this miserable thing that is not
working,
then I'm going to lose everything, and the children won't have a home, and the dogs will go to foster care. And okay. So the only way to keep all of this is to continue doing this thing that's making me and my husband incredibly unhappy.
Yeah.
Doesn't make sense when you hear it out loud in somebody else's voice,
no.
Does it? Those kinds of things only make sense when they're inside our conditioned minds. And especially when somebody smart and mean is talking to a little kid.
Yeah. And so just with his, I mean, he really, he's very distant, just always very distant, turns his head when I approach him closely and...
Good. Ignore him.
Just ignore him.
Ignore him and concentrate on making her happy. Now, we can't do it for this reason. We can't do these things for this reason, but it is something to consider. Happy people tend to be very attractive. You know the old Woody Allen quote? If only anxiety and neediness were attractive.
Okay.
Got
and
it?
And that's really what it is. It's needy and...
Yep.
I mean, that's kind of what he's said
yep.
in the past. He just can't stand any he does any
yep.
kind of approach.
Yep.
And my sense is that I'm showing affection, but...
Yes. Well, show her some affection.
Show her affection.
Yes. Give her lots of attention.
So it's like it could work with... someone else, but in this circumstance, it's just not.
That's right. So you're a perfect match, you two. And he's going to have to work out his salvation, and you're going to have to work out yours. And the best way to do that is to start giving your attention where it's actually going to do some good.
Yeah.
And you'll hear all kinds of voices about selfishness. And clearly you'll hear all sorts of voices about how you're going to be homeless and your children will have, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's self-hate.
Mm-hmm.
That's, we know what that is, okay?
Yeah.
She's the one who needs the care and the attention and the affection. Give it to her. She'll appreciate it.
All right.
And then call me and let me know how you're doing.
Okay. Well, I'm so thankful I called.
Me too.
Thank you very much, Sherry. Thank you.
You are so welcome. Take care of her.
Okay, I will.
All right. Excellent.
Okay.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Susan. Sherry, that was a powerful call.
Yeah, it's big, isn't it? You know, again, it's so contrary to everything that we're taught. You know, it's selfish to take care of yourself. What you need to do is sacrifice yourself for somebody else, especially if it's somebody else who doesn't even want you to sacrifice yourself. And it's just all backwards. So we find the person who really is willing and interested to be loved and embraced in compassion and acceptance, and then we do that for that person.
Yes.
It's a good system. Really, it's a very good system.
It's a very good system. And it was a very good show.
It was a good show, wasn't it, Michael?
Yes.
Let's have another one next week.
Let's do another one next week. Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you, Michael. Good night.
Good night.